We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. That fine gentleman over there, the one, the only, the incomparable, Dan Rubenstein at the start of the last week of 2021. Sir, how are you?
Good. Ty, I am excited for the show. I've been looking forward to the show for quite some time. A lot of huge matchups. The first time we've discussed a big slate of huge matchups for us. Six pretty interesting and crazy big games in quite some time. Even conference championship weekend was sort of mix and match, but I'm excited for this show. I'm about to bake my final pizzas of the year, likely. I'm about to pack for a longish flight to California with two children under 3 years old. So it's all sort of happening at the same time, but I'm going to be watching these games, all of these games from the Pacific time zone, which if you have not experienced watching football or sports from the Pacific time zone, ooh, is it nice? I'm excited.
Well, wherever this podcast may find you, thank you so much for downloading, for supporting, for playing along with our weirdness at home. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, review out on Apple, Spotify, Google, really anywhere it lets you. We would appreciate that. That's one good way you can help the show. Also, Verballers.com is still going 24/7, 365. Verballers.com, that's our Patreon. We do all the bonus stuff out there, the Brew and A, which you just got done recording. You've also got video content out there. There's our Discord community, which is always thriving. Always thriving. So go and check that out. Again, verballers.com if you're interested in further supporting the show. And solidgiveaway.com. Solidgiveaway.com. Again, in about 2 weeks, we're going to draw a winner for everybody who entered to win a signed Desmond Howard mini helmet, Dan. And that is the theme of this show because not Desmond Howard, but...
No, I'm going on a podcast with Desmond Howard next week. How about that?
There you go.
There's connective tissue. And Jimmy Roberts... Everybody likes Jimmy Roberts.
The
Hello Heisman podcast.
Well,
Tell
Desmond Howard that we're giving out a signed Desmond Howard mini helmet on January the 10th, and folks can enter to win at solidgiveaway.com.
I will tell him to tell people to do that. Sure.
All right. Well, before we go any further, it's not really breaking, but it's sort of already broke. The Gator Bowl. The Gator Bowl. In case you've been living under a rock, we sort of got another outbreak, another surge, another whatever you want to call it, of COVID-19. Just won't go away. Won't leave us alone.
No.
Which sucks. And various bowl games are having to deal with this. Various teams who are still playing in their bowl games are having to deal with this. Texas A&M, they are out of the Gator Bowl due to COVID. Such is now the case where the bowl game is searching for a replacement team. We're recording this on December the 23rd, so by the time a number of you listen to this, we may already know what the new matchup's going to be. But an odd circumstance, again, these are odd times. Yeah. It seems like Rutgers is probably going to be the play.
Yeah, based on having the highest, what, APR score of the schools that went 5-7, Brett Bielema was worked up because he and Shad Khan wanted to get Illinois in there because Shad Khan, the owner of the Jags, went to Illinois and he was lobbying hard. When you have Gator Bowl glory on the line, you will stop at nothing. That's what they say. That's the old adage. Everybody knows.
Odd circumstances. So Wake Forest is going to play somebody. I had a Wake Forest +5 bet that was voided out and bummed me out because I was all ready to go.
And I had my prediction that Blake Boast was going to be the story of bowl season, and that's not going to come to pass.
No.
So, no. I mean, look, it's an actual bummer because I think a lot of kids actually really do enjoy the experience of going to a bowl game, you know, one final, you know, for seniors or whoever that's moving on, transferring, going to the NFL, like one final hurrah with your teammates and coaches on the road and the camaraderie. It does suck. Obviously, A&M would like to be there, and it does suck that there is, you know, there are so few people available in this game because of contact tracing, because of positive tests and everything like that, and thankfully it seems that the Omicron variant is a pretty mild one. So hopefully everybody afflicted, both within the Texas A&M program and anywhere who have it, it's mild and everybody can move on from that. So it's a bummer.
It is a huge bummer. I guess along the same lines, the other news that came out is that the college football playoff is trying to figure out what to do in the event that something goes south on the COVID front with regard to the two playoff games. This is a quote from our good friend Bill Hancock, with whom I shared a huge bowl of Tostitos way back when.
Was it Scoops or was it a classic Tostito?
It was a classic Tostito, but the one with a hint of lime.
Okay. And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay with it, but if you eat too many of them, you're not okay with it.
Yeah. Dry out your mouth.
Dries out your mouth.
Sour mouth. Yeah.
Quote, as we prepare for the playoff, it's wise and necessary to put into place additional precautions to protect those who will play and coach the games. These policies will better protect our students and staffs.
By the way, we got an email that Stavs is being investigated by like the Wichita State or Tulane English department. Continue.
Staffs.
Stavs. Yep.
While providing clarity in the event of a worst case scenario. So here's the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario is that one or more teams can't field a team. They can't play. And in effect, what this new policy is saying is that if you can't play, you basically forfeit.
Mm-hmm.
And if it comes down to it, the last team standing is going to be the one that wins the national championship. So you could imagine there are all sorts of odd circumstances that could transpire as a result of this. We're, of course, not hoping for anyone to get wiped out because of COVID. But like, you could definitely cook up a scenario in which Michigan and Cincinnati both can't play. Therefore, both Alabama and Georgia will advance by virtue of forfeit. Or three teams go down and one is left standing and they kind of give it to them, maybe in the old style of the old bowl format. I don't know. It's very weird. It's very strange that they're talking this through. You would have hoped that they would have had this policy in place before now, right? Like,
right.
We've kind of been dealing with this for a bit. But at the same note, this is just where we're at, and basically you don't want to forfeit, otherwise it's going to get real weird in a hurry.
I agree, and I don't know if anything was mentioned as for if the teams who win the semifinal games both can't play. I know that they said they can push it back as far as like 4 days.
The 14th.
Is it then declared a no contest that there is, like it's just going to be a year on the history books where there's no national champion? Or they just anticipate like, okay, that'll be enough time based on testing to get a national championship game in, but what if only, I guess if only one team can field a squad with enough people to meet the minimum that they're declared the national champion? Do teams just lock out the testers? Is that what you do after you win a semifinal game? You're just like, oh, sorry, your key card doesn't work.
This reminds me a lot of when I was in high school and we would try to organize pickup football games on the weekends. And you never knew exactly how many people you're going to get, but you needed to get an even number. And you would stop at no cost to try and get that even number so you could get out there and play. You didn't want to have to be in the situation where you had the all-time quarterback, because that was just
correct.
Weird. But
I agree.
Whatever it takes, right? We hope everybody stays safe. I want to see these playoff games. I'm excited to see both of them. And we're going to talk about both of them here on the show.
Somebody asked us a question, like, where would Georgia having to forfeit either a semifinal or a championship game rank on all-time Georgia heartbreak for fans? And it would be, it'd be up there. It'd be real high up there.
Yeah. Or would it be worse for Georgia, or would it be worse for Michigan? Because Michigan is equally as starved for that kind of high-level success that they brought Jim Harbaugh on to try and achieve.
But Georgia has taken a number of relatively recent bites at the apple that Michigan hasn't necessarily been able to take, and, you know, losing on 2nd-and-26 in overtime, losing the way they did with Aaron Murray in the SEC championship game, possibly fielding the best Mark Richt team of the era in 2008. What was the year where they were, like, kind of clearly the best team, but lost something stupid and ended up beating up on Hawaii in the Sugar Bowl, I want to say?
The Colt Brennan game.
The Colt Brennan game, may he rest in peace, yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot there with Georgia and inexplicable heartbreak that this would qualify. This would absolutely qualify. But it, also there's the asterisk, because it's just unique circumstances, of course. But yeah, you're right, though. It did take some time for the playoff to say, here are our plans if we fall into a certain predicament. Yeah.
Crazy stuff. So we'll hope against hope that that does not happen. Mm-hmm. But if it does, just know that Bill Hancock got you covered.
Always.
Today's show is all about the New Year's Six and the playoffs. So we're going to talk about all four of the playoff teams towards the end of the show. But we're also going to talk about the rest of the New Year's Six games. Dan, let's just jump right in. Let's do it.
Dan, time, help, I need picks of the week.
That sound drop may be a bit misleading. We already gave our picks for these games. But
yeah, but I mean, I'm willing to open up our minds to the possibility that with news stories about, you know, perhaps a quarterback having COVID or something like that, or coaches having COVID, or giving it more thought, I'm open to shifting our perspective, especially because we gave our picks confidence pool wise, not against the spread.
That's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct. And plus, there are new opt-outs. There are new circumstances that we can explore here. So
yep,
let's just dive right in. Let's go to the Peach Bowl. They play this one on Thursday, December the 30th, 7 p.m. on ESPN. It is Pitt. It is Michigan State. Michigan State is favored by about 2.5-3 points, depending where you look. The notable opt-outs here, Kenny Pickett. Kenny Pickett not playing.
Mm-hmm.
We, I think, had a pretty good indication of this when they asked him at the Heisman ceremony or around the Heisman ceremony, hey, man, you gonna play? And he's like, I need to talk to my parents.
Yeah.
Not usually a ringing endorsement for playing.
Yeah. I compared that to asking somebody to the prom and them saying, I'll get back to you. Let's circle back. Not great. So, no, he's not playing, and I get it.
Kenny Pickett out. Kenneth Walker III is also out. There was some speculation from Mel Tucker that he was going to play, but at the time we did our preview, we just didn't know for sure. It hadn't been set in stone. So he's going to be out as well.
By the way, are you surprised by the Kenny Pickett thing?
That he's not playing?
Yeah, like I get it from a running back's perspective for sure. I get it from a lineman, especially maybe a defensive lineman for sure. Like if you are getting hit on every play, which is football, and I also, you know, I do respect people who are like, no, of course I'm playing in the bowl game. But from a quarterback perspective, especially one who is going to be on arguably the biggest stage of the season for him, maybe other than the Clemson game, who has aspirations, and maybe he's just clearly the number one quarterback in the draft. I'm not a draft Nick. I don't know where that stands right now. But it seems like the opportunity as a quarterback on that stage, as a competitor, in a New Year's Six game, he's not playing in the Outback Bowl. He's not playing in the Meineke Car Care Bowl when that was a thing. If it's still a thing, I don't know if it is. He's playing in a gigantic bowl game in an NFL stadium against a top flight program at Michigan State. Oh, a little surprised. Caught me a little by surprise that he wouldn't want to put a cap on an excellent season.
I think there has to be serious injury concern here. That's the only reason you wouldn't play against Michigan State, because a guy who has been as successful and as talented as Kenny Pickett as a passer would eat well against the Michigan State defense.
That's I was going to say.
One of the things we've come to know about Michigan State is that pass defense is no bueno.
Yeah. No.
So no, I get it. I don't know. I mean, I'm not all that surprised because you've got all sorts of big names opting out. And it is a bummer we won't get to see him on this big stage, but at the same time, got to protect yourself.
Is this the biggest Pitt bowl game since 2000? What was it, 04, 05, when they lost to Urban Meyer, Utah?
I think so.
It is.
Wow. Yeah, okay. I think so. This is a big one.
Well, to each their own.
Big one, really, for both of these schools.
Totally.
With Michigan State having their own renaissance season. You know, both teams have been really good against the point spread. Again, the line is 2.5, 3 in favor of Michigan State. Both are about equal, hitting the over a little bit more than hitting the under. Both defenses have some questions. I think Pitt's defense is clearly better than Michigan State's, if only because of that passing component that I just discussed with the Spartans. There is a question for me that I can't get past regarding the Pitt offense without Kenny Pickett. And
sure.
I know they have weapons, but I don't know what they're going to do without him and how they're going to move the football without their best player. And so I understand that Michigan State is also in a similar spot.
Same question. Yeah.
They're in a similar spot, but we have seen more games where Kenneth Walker has been like sort of curtailed than we have seen games where Kenny Pickett just hasn't played for this version of Pitt.
Yeah.
I think because of that, I favor Michigan State, and I think there are more ways for them to win on offense. I am worried, though, that this sort of devolves into like a weird shootout with a bunch of no-names, and Pitt somehow finds a way to win it by, you know, a 34-33 score. But do you have a lean here?
Yeah, I'm sticking with Pitt. I'm sticking with Pitt because I'd rather know nothing about, I think it's Nick Patty, who's the backup quarterback for Pitt. I'd rather know nothing about what he's capable of than know that whoever, whatever quarterback is there is kind of not so good. And I'd rather have the mystery paired with a good defense rather than how does Michigan State move the ball efficiently. I know Peyton Thorne was pretty good downfield, but if they don't have that home run ability of Kenneth Walker, we've seen Michigan State really struggle against obviously a top flight Ohio State team and Purdue. But I think Pitt is that team where like they can weather the loss of Pickett, even if Nick Patty is only approximating 60% or something of the Kenny Pickett experience. They can run the ball well enough. They have the best receiver in this game. They have the best pass rush, the best ability to prevent bigger plays. I just think all things considered, I'd rather roll with the mystery of Pitt than what I know about Michigan State and the low point of this game, which is looks like the Michigan State pass defense. Like, what better pass defense is there to come in against as a backup than Michigan State's with one of the best 3 or 4 receivers in the country?
I just think losing Kenny Pickett kind of cuts their heart out.
I hear you.
You know, and this is a defense that on paper on the Pitt side is like a top 30 defense in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you look at some of the underlying numbers, you're a little less enthused. If you look at some of the results from this season, you know, I take that game against Miami as an example. Like they give up points. It's not like a shutdown defense like we've seen in the past for Pat Narduzzi.
Yeah, but I mean, they're scoring points. So like they're giving teams drives. They're giving teams opportunity. I think on a per drive basis, they're still decent. I can look it up right now, but I hear you. I see what you're saying.
But without Kenny Pickett, I think is really what spooks me. And again, as I'm trying to be the conductor here of the Underthink Express, it just seems to me like clearly the best player in this game not playing is going to have more effect on his respective team. So
okay,
I go enough. Michigan State minus the number, but honestly, no confidence whatsoever here. No
H2P
confidence whatsoever here.
Penn State are picking against Pitt. Cliched. I'm sticking H2P. And by the way, Pitt, the number 24 points per drive allowed versus FBS teams without including garbage time. So pretty good.
Let's go ahead and jump ahead to 2022. We'll come back to the playoffs a little bit later. This one is at 1:00 Eastern on ESPN. In 2022, Happy New Year. The Fiesta Bowl between Oklahoma State and Notre Dame. Notre Dame favored by 2. This is a very interesting matchup on so many different levels. I will be glued to my television watching this game. I am thrilled that Notre Dame got in this game against Oklahoma State. Notre Dame, obviously the circumstances there are, I think, pretty obvious. They've got a new coach in Marcus Freeman. They are going to be without Kyle Hamilton, but they've been without Kyle Hamilton. Kyren Williams will not be playing either as he is going pro. I think there is enough talent in the backfield that they'll be okay. So I don't, those are meaningful and those are names, but I don't know if they necessarily have a huge impact on this game. Otherwise, Notre Dame been very good against the spread, 9-3. On the flip side, we've got Oklahoma State also 9-3-1. Mm-hmm. Against the point spread this year. I guess the big story for them would be the Jim Knowles thing. That right. After the game, Jim Knowles is going to Ohio State, which means he gets a look at Notre Dame now, and then again in the first week of the 2022 season, Notre Dame goes to the horseshoe.
How crucial is the Kyren Williams, because I always see this during Notre Dame games, Kyren Williams is an able blocker in pass protection. Like, Chris Tyree is smaller, right?
Kyren Williams isn't that big of a dude, but he has definitely stepped up pass protection.
I wonder because, it's either the best defense or the second best defense Notre Dame has played all year after Wisconsin. Or maybe Cincinnati, so maybe it's the third best defense, whatever. They've played some tough games and have struggled at times for stretches in those games to score on offense. So I wonder what the actual impact is. Are you happy with where the offensive line ascended to in the second half of the year?
I am. Okay. I am. I mean, the schedule got easier the second half of the year, and we can't discount that. But at the same time, it took a while for this thing to form up. And once it did, after the bye week in particular, Notre Dame definitely started to get more organized along that offensive line and find a lot more of its rhythm. Jack Cohn was able to go downfield a little bit more. So I feel optimistic coming into this matchup. I am worried, though, that if Jim Knowles starts bringing guys in waves, what's going to happen?
Right.
Notre Dame hasn't played a whole lot of teams that play that downhill on defense. I mean, if you look up and down this schedule, they played Cincinnati. Cincinnati's a good defense, held Notre Dame to 13 points. Played Wisconsin. Wisconsin was
that was like
a
bunch of pick six, and so that wasn't the offense overwhelming the Badger defense.
No. So I'm curious to see, but the rest of the way, like, not a whole lot of defense to be had after that bye week. I'm curious to see what Notre Dame looks like now, having the benefit of six really strong showings down the stretch to get their offense in order to now go up against this good defense.
Kyren Williams, he was also I'll confirm this as I'm speaking, though. Is he not the second leading receiver for this team as well?
Third leading receiver.
So it's Kevin Austin is going to need to be an even bigger weapon for Notre Dame against this defense, because somebody's going to have to make a play against Oklahoma State to win this game on the outside. Just, I don't think they're going to allow much on the ground. And look, if Spencer Sanders, and we haven't even really talked about the Poke offense, if he only throws two picks, there's a decent chance they stay in this game, because essentially the turnovers really held them back against Baylor, to say the least.
Yeah.
So, I do wonder, like, who is that, the winter wonder, right? Michael Mayer, we know, has that potential. Who is the other winter wonder with Kyren Williams out for Notre Dame, able to step up against a top-flight national defense on a big stage?
I think what you'll see is definitely some focus on Kevin Austin, trying to get him open. Kevin Austin, look, has had a hard time getting on the field. He's had a good run of games now where it definitely seems he's gotten more of the trust of his quarterback and the offense as a whole. And so he's a big play caliber, physical type of wideout. And if they can get him more involved, that they would be better for it. Outside of him, though, you know, where are you looking for plays? Chris Tyree's a guy who's really good if you get him in space. He's shifty. You can put him in the slot. You can do stuff with him. We haven't seen a whole lot of that this year. I think that was the plan, but it just sort of didn't work out that way. Logan Diggs, the young running back, I think we'll see him trying to go a little bit more north and south. He got some action down the stretch as well. So they have guys that they can mix in to do a lot of the same stuff as Kyren Williams, but I don't know if they've got one guy they can go to that will do it all. And out wide, outside of Mayer and Austin, it will be a factor of, okay, who else can we get involved to confuse this defense? Because it is a very good defense.
Yeah.
This might be the best defense they've played all year. So at least from that standpoint, I'm curious to see what Notre Dame, what Marcus Freeman, what Tommy Rees have up their sleeves, because this could be a situation where they want to pull out all the stops. They want to empty the playbook. Maybe not fully empty it, knowing that they've got Jim Knowles on deck again week one of 2022. But
right,
there will be turnover before that game. It will be different. It will not be exactly the same. So I think for me, and I could be biased, for me, I like Notre Dame across the board a little better than I like Oklahoma State. I don't trust the Oklahoma State offense at all.
Fair.
Under Spencer Sanders. And the Notre Dame defense, even if they're going to be without Kyle Hamilton, again, they've been without him most of the year. I feel like the Notre Dame defense is sort of underrated in this matchup.
I didn't realize Foskey has mounted up the season that he did. I remember watching him pop a little bit, right? It's Isaiah Foskey, right?
Yep.
Like, he's a playmaker on this defense.
Very good. Very good. So this is a defense that, for sure, hasn't had a whole lot of national names.
Other than Kyle Hamilton, yeah.
Other than Hamilton, but they play really well as a team. They've definitely found a way to pull it together after a rocky start for Marcus Freeman. You know, he came on and it was like, what are we doing here?
Right.
Why did we bring this guy over again?
Yeah.
It came together really well. And this defense in the end, I think, certainly finished really strong. Ended up finishing out as like a top 15, top 20 defense nationally. So it's also very good. And I think that will be the difference in this game. That's why I favor Notre Dame.
I'm buying low on Oklahoma State. I'm buying low to almost win a conference championship game throwing four interceptions. To come within mere inches means that the numbers once again say that Spencer Sanders is not going to throw four interceptions in consecutive weeks or consecutive games. So I'm going again with the defense in the pass rush in this spot. Jaylen Warren was practicing, so that offers them hopefully some sort of balance on this offense that Spencer Sanders doesn't feel like he has to play hero ball and do everything himself. So I'm going Oklahoma State, the poke defense, maybe getting a kick return deep into Notre Dame territory or extra points that way with Brennan Presley, as we've seen that they are a good return team. I'm going pokes here. Not for anything other than the fact that I think the strongest thing in this game is their defense, and I think they will play more mistake-free football on offense. So I'm going Oklahoma State here, and don't feel great about it, but what was the last line you saw in this game?
Two.
Like 2 points?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Oklahoma State wins this game outright and, you know, puts a cap on a really impressive year other than a couple of spots.
I think a key for Oklahoma State, just to close the loop here, is Spencer Sanders with his legs. Sanders with his legs, the guy ran for over 600 yards this season. It's not necessarily what he's looking to do first, but it is part of his game. And when he incorporates it and is able to do so efficiently and responsibly without shooting Oklahoma State in the foot, he can be really dangerous.
How are Notre Dame's linebackers? How are the Irish linebackers? Like, do they have like a Drew Tranquil, Jalen Smith, like really fast, sure tackler type?
They have guys who have had a good year. To say that they've got anybody who rises to that level, I don't think so. But J.D. Bertrand's had a really good year for him. Drew White had a really good year for them. Like, they have Jack Kaiser, right? They have guys who have had really solid years. But in terms of that true playmaker from the linebacker position, J.D. Bertrand's had a ton of tackles. I don't know if he's quite that athletic.
Okay. I mean, I'm not Spencer Sanders is not Lamar Jackson with the ball, but yeah. I hear you. Okay.
I favor Notre Dame here.
Yep. Pokes.
Let's go to 5 p.m. ESPN. The Rose Bowl, Dan. Granddaddy.
Yes.
Utah, Ohio State. Ohio State favored by 6.5. Again, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Talk me through Utah. Utah killed your Oregon Ducks twice.
Yeah. A team who beat Ohio State.
Both teams about 500 against the spread. So no real leans there one way or the other. How do you feel about Utah going into this game?
Really good. The clear motivated team between these two, right? That Utah is ascending. Utah finally broke through and won the Pac-12. They were in that spot in 2019, a game away from a major bowl game, and lose to Oregon. I think it was in the Bay Area. That was at Santa Clara. And lost decisively. And to beat Oregon twice the way that they did, to have the emotional release and still the emotions with them after an extremely trying year, emotionally, physically, whatever, from the loss of Aaron Lowe and Ty Jordan. And to get to this point, for Kyle Whittingham to break through. You know, the transfer cam rising with, you know, the combination of the defensive player of the year in the Pac-12, Devin Lloyd. Who is that guy? That was your question about Notre Dame. Do they have that linebacker? Utah has that linebacker.
Sure.
Devin Lloyd. And then Mike Tafua up front, another all-conference, if not all-American caliber defensive lineman. They're young elsewhere on the defense, but they're talented. They make plays. Better against the pass than they are against the run. They get pushed around a little bit, the youth up front, but didn't happen against Oregon. And it does seem that Utah is one of those teams that is built to beat a defense like Ohio State's. And the way that Michigan and Oregon both pushed Ohio State around up front, that's Utah's MO. Tavian Thomas is an underrated running back, I think, nationally, if he's at full health, which he got beat up near the end of the year. If he's at full health, Cam Rising doesn't make a ton of mistakes. Is athletic enough to extend plays and, you know, pick up a 3rd and 6 with his feet or something like that. I like Utah here. I think if you were going to build a team to beat Ohio State, they limit the big plays from a defensive perspective. We still don't know the status of Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson at the time of recording. So with that hanging over things, with the way Ohio State lost to Michigan and didn't even get to play in the Big Ten championship game, it's weird to say that the Rose Bowl is a consolation, which I never think it fully is for a Pac-12 or Big Ten team. But all things considered, if you're Mr. Motivation, Utah has that in droves here. Utah, to put a cap on their year with a win over Ohio State would be everything.
So now hold on.
Okay.
When we did our bowl confidence preview, you were on Ohio State here.
Well, I'm just talking about the case for Utah right now. Yeah. Okay. We can go into Ohio State.
So is that to say then that you like Utah, but still not enough to pick them to win outright? Because I picked Utah outright here.
Yeah, I know. I hear you.
I agree with pretty much all of that sentiment. Utah can play bully ball.
Mm-hmm.
They can play bully ball. And that was how Michigan beat Ohio State. We know Ohio State is a bit susceptible to that. And I don't know if Utah necessarily has the weapons that Michigan has elsewhere on offense. But at the same time, it's a similar enough brand of football that if they play it well, if they stay motivated, if they don't do anything stupid, I think they will absolutely keep this close and give themselves a shot to win. So you know where I stand on bowl games. I'm all about the motivation. It hasn't necessarily fared the best for me, by the way, right, in my own bowl confidence pool at this point, to be fair.
Sure.
But that motivation factor for Utah, it's the first time they're playing in the Rose Bowl ever.
Mm-hmm.
We know what kind of a season and a half it's been for Utah, some of the adversity they've had to go through.
Mm-hmm.
To kind of rally the troops and get to this game is in and of itself a huge accomplishment for Kyle Whittingham. So I'm on Utah plus the points here. I hope it gets a little higher than 6.5 at game time. I could see that happening because Ohio State's a team that the public likes to bet up. So if this gets to like 7, 7.5, I'm jumping on Utah. But for as long as it stays below 7, I will probably just hang tight. I do like Utah, though. I'm just not super confident in it.
Yeah, I think Utah wins this game by 5 or loses it by 27. Like, I don't know how much in between there is, right? If Ohio State has their receivers, if CJ Stroud is really operating, you know, has all this time off, Ohio State has the time to game plan for Utah. You know, there certainly has not been a Pac-12 offense with the kind of firepower anywhere near with what Ohio State's dealing with. So maybe Utah won the worst Pac-12 of the modern era, which I think is a reasonable argument to make when you look up and down the conference. When you look at USC and Washington and Oregon's faults and Stanford and all the Arizona schools, like maybe that's the case. And I think there's a possibility. I'm going to stick with Ohio State here just because I trust their ceiling a little bit more, but I am going against. This is like it's like a handshake of your motivation principles and my defense principles, right? You know what? Screw it. I'm going belief system. I'm going Utes. You know what? I'm not shying away from what got me to the Mount Olympus of college football podcasting with you, kind sir. I'm going with Utah here. Go Utes.
I just think the motivation for them is going to be so great. And again, you were right to mention the Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave question.
Mm-hmm.
I would be surprised if they played in this game. Both those guys are potential first round wideouts. But
so
they might.
With that understanding, it makes Utah an easier pick for sure.
It makes them an easier pick, but I don't know if it's that much easier. because they still have Jackson Smith and Jigba. They still have other guys that they can play. Julian sure. Fleming. Like, they got dudes that they can plug in to play wideout at Ohio State. So I'm not too worried if those guys decide they're going to opt out. I do think, though, that Utah's a more motivated team. They have to be.
Yeah.
And you know that's how I pick them in bowl season.
There is a universe in which Trevion Henderson, which Trey Henderson runs for 197 yards.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
There is that universe. You're like, oh, man, I guess it didn't matter that Chris Olave declared.
Well, they're just a persistent home run threat.
Right. It's the number one most explosive rushing attack in America.
All the time.
CJ Stroud and the receivers get the attention. But yeah. Oof.
And it's hot and cold. You know, it's mostly hot for Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been some of those cold spells where you have to wonder, like, okay, and what's going on here? And when up against a good defense and a team that can play that really physical brand of football and control possession and do the things that Utah does from time to time, like, it's not the most, like, outrageous thing in the world that Utah would win this game.
No, not at all. I mean, you can look at last year and you say, okay, different quarterback, different stage, and certainly the motivation to beat Clemson is different than the motivation to beat Utah from a national brand perspective. But Ryan Day, with time and an explosive offense, where they drop almost 50 on Clemson?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's one of those situations where, like, I guess, doubt Ohio State with time at your own peril. Doubt Ohio State with time at your own peril on a big stage with a powerful, explosive offense. It's rough. I don't love it, but I'm going belief system.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, our final New Year's Six non-playoff game. 8:45, standard issue time for the Sugar Bowl on ESPN. It is Baylor Bears. It is Ole Miss. Ole Miss is favored by like a point, something like that. Let's just call it a pick 'em. Doesn't really matter. This is a hell of a game. I am thrilled that this game is going to happen. Baylor won the Big 12 championship, lost to Oklahoma State and TCU, but have been very good against the point spread. Baylor, again, their over-under coming into the season was 5.5. Typically, when you've got a team where folks are like betting on 5 wins, if they do much better, they're going to be good against the point spread because nobody saw it coming.
Correct. And Vegas is always late to adjust.
Baylor is one of those teams. I want a ton of money on Baylor this year. I feel terrific about it. Ole Miss also very good against the point spread. 7-4-1 had that one push, but 10-2 overall, lost to Bama and Auburn. Not bad losses by any stretch. They had the weird Tennessee game, which they won by what? One possession, right?
Yeah. That was the only one of their wins. I think that was their only single digit win, if you look at their schedule, I believe. So they were, I think we all figured Ole Miss would improve and Baylor would improve, but we figured Ole Miss would improve. But to win the way that they did as decisively with the defense to improve as dramatically over the course of the season, I certainly underestimated Ole Miss for a good chunk of this season. And I think one of the stats in this game, this matchup specifically, and I love when this happens. I love when one team is 128th in the country at something, the other team is second at on the other side of the ball. Ole Miss has the number one blitz sack rate metric in the country. They get home to the quarterback when blitzing more efficiently than any other team. And Baylor on offense is atrocious in sacks allowed when blitzed. I don't know if that affects things. I don't know if that forces a scoop and score that changes the complexion of this game, but something to pay attention to when one team does something expertly against a team who protects against it in a disastrous way. But no, this matchup is terrific. You're absolutely right.
One of the reasons why I think you feel good about Ole Miss in this matchup is because of the defense. You're right to bring up the sack rate, right? They've been very good at that. But this is a defense that has gradually improved itself over the course of the year. It's not something we're too used to saying about Ole Miss, because for a good long time, it's been all throttle, no bottle on offense.
Yeah, but also, I mean, they had the Land Sharks. We're not that far removed from...
We're pretty far removed from Robert Khimdiche.
Bob Khimdiche. Denzel Khimdiche.
We're pretty far removed from that. That was a different
era.
They
had guys, man. I know.
Okay. But the point holds here, one way or the other, that Lane Kiffin has done a tremendous job at Oxford. And the defense has improved. If the defense keeps improving, and if Ole Miss can keep turning in 10-win seasons, he will surely be bolting for greener pastures. But...
Yeah.
Not for a bit. Sign that extension. So you feel good about Ole Miss. Baylor, I went on a Baylor podcast, our good friend Peter Pope over at our daily podcast.
Pope.
And talked through Baylor. I was wrong about Baylor. I had Baylor pegged for under 5.5, for 5 wins. I was not in on this team at all. There were too many variables. They won 2 games last year. Dave Aranda changed his tendencies. He went for it more on fourth down. He swapped out Larry Fedora because that wasn't working. He brought over Jeff Grimes, who simplified things and made the offense better. It was really a good success story and definitely an awesome marketing pitch for anybody who might want Dave Aranda in the future.
Totally.
It proved that he's not an egomaniac. It proved that the guy is open-minded, and if he needs to make changes quickly, he's well-equipped to do so.
Yeah, that and the just going for it on every fourth down. Great.
33 times this year they went for it on fourth down.
Yep.
They got 2/3 of them. You compare that to Ole Miss, which also is nuts when it comes to fourth down. Ole Miss was second in the nation. They went for it like 43 times or something like that. They didn't have nearly as high a conversion rate, but these are two aggressive teams. Yeah. They want to play aggressively. They want to play downhill. And I think that's part of the reason why I love the matchup here. I favor Baylor because Baylor may not have the sex appeal of an Ole Miss, but Baylor's just really solid. And solid gets you places in 2021, man. Like, ever since Dave Aranda stepped on campus, he has had this team fired up to play. They play, if nothing more, even when they're winning 2 games a year in 2020, they play hard for him. He will have this team ready for this game. He will have them prepared. They will put in a solid showing. They will just be solid. They don't need to be great. They don't need to be flashy. Mm-hmm. They just need to be solid. Go out there and play your game. What does Baylor do well? Look across the board. All the numbers that we would pinpoint as the ones that show a team puts in maximum effort week in and week out, special teams and defense, and we could really dive in if we wanted. But Baylor does all those things. They play really hard. I expect we're going to get a really strong performance from them here. This is a big showing for Baylor. I think Gary Bohannon he's supposed to play. He's probable.
Yeah, he's been practicing. I think the expectation was that he is going to play. Never Love, by the way. Yeah, quarterback's probably going to play. Hamstring is in tatters.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, yeah. I don't love. I don't love hamstring, and I think it's his right hamstring with you pushing off, whatever. I don't know. I like Baylor a good amount, but I like Ole Miss in this game even more. And you by the way, you just cursed Baylor by saying their special teams was impressive. The special teams is fine. It was okay.
They've had moments.
They've had moments. They've made plays.
Yes. That's fair.
You just clinched Ole Miss returning a kickoff for a touchdown. I know. You just did that and have Ole Miss win by 7 points. I'm going with the Rebels here. I'm going with Lane Kiffin with time. I'm going with the better quarterback situation. I'm going with the defense that I feel like has the higher upside athletically, even though, yes, Jalen Petrie is a very, very good safety back there for Baylor. I am going with the team that I trust to get to 31 points more efficiently, which is where I think you need to get to in this game. So I'm going Ole Miss. I'm going Ole Miss. I'm going quarterback. I'm going speed. And I'm going various ways to win. And I watched Baylor just screech to a halt after that first quarter against Oklahoma State. Ole Miss's defense is not where the Pokes is. I get that. But that scares me a little bit. It scares me a little bit, the start and stop element to Baylor football. Great season. Great year. Great story. Great everything. They win the conference. Awesome. I'm going Ole Miss here.
I like the fact that Baylor is better and probably more comfortable as a team with a ground attack.
Yeah, Abram Smith, a terrifically underrated running back.
I like the fact that that is more their game coming into this matchup. If it were the other way around, if it was more passing oriented, I don't know. I would be spooked that this could turn into a shootout. And that's Ole Miss's game, man. You want to get into a shootout with Ole Miss, you're probably going to lose. I don't think that's how Baylor is going to approach this. I think they'll be able to run the ball pretty well. They'll be able to control things and not let it get too out of hand. They don't want to have to play from behind. They don't want to have to be scoring 45 points in order to win this thing in the final minutes of the game. So I'm going to go Baylor here. I'm not confident in any of these games. I'm just not. This is a great matchup.
Speak with your chest. Come on, chest.
I can't.
Chest.
I'm not going to lie to our people.
Okay.
I'm not confident at all. If I am picking, though, I am sticking to my guns, going by what I said on the Bowl Confidence preview show that we did.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Baylor here outright.
Yeah. By the way, something we didn't mention, what we sort of alluded to, there might be no punts at this game. Both of these coaches love saying, like, F it, do it. Let's go. Let's go.
I love
play
it.
Football.
I love
Fourth
it.
Fourth and one. Midfield. Why not?
It's the Sugar Bowl. It's
this is your
exhibition
all throttle,
game. No bottle. It's an exhibition game. Matt Corral is going to be playing. You know, he wants to stay out there.
Of course.
So, yeah, I hope so. And I expect we'll see that. Why not?
Yeah. No, this is, to me, of the New Year's Six games, this is more interesting to me than Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, more interesting to me than Pitt, Michigan State, Utah, Ohio State. I always love the Rose Bowl, and I think this one's going to be, you know, from a narrative standpoint, pretty interesting. But Baylor, Ole Miss, man, that is way up there. Maybe the number one of these non-playoff games.
I completely agree with you. I was thrilled when I saw this matchup.
Yeah.
Thrilled. Absolutely thrilled. So great game. Again, that's 8:45 on New Year's Day.
First favorite I've taken. Utah dog, Oklahoma State a dog, and Pitt a dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Let's do it.
This New Year's Eve will be so awesome. The stars have all aligned.
They're
so
playing these damn games on New Year's Eve again. Biggest pet peeve in all of my pet peeves. We're going to get college football on New Year's Eve. They're trying to start the new tradition. I don't know if it's actually taken or not. But nonetheless, if you want to watch the games, you got to set aside some time starting at 3:30 on New Year's Eve, because that's when we've got the first of two college football playoff semifinals. They play this one at the Cotton Bowl. It is number 4 Cincinnati. It is number 1 Alabama. Alabama favored by 13 at time of recording.
Mm-hmm.
Cincinnati won 13-0. They were the only undefeated team. A huge deal for Luke Fickell. If Luke Fickell weren't playing in a playoff, I wonder if Luke Fickell would be coaching elsewhere. If he'd be at Notre Dame, not Marcus Freeman. Or if he'd be at LSU or USC or any of these other places. But
yeah,
good on Cincinnati for holding on to this guy. He's done a great job. They're headed to the Big 12 at some point in the very near future. And Luke Fickell has definitely earned the right to be choosy and patient and picky if he even wants to go somewhere else, because he's clearly building something really good here at Cincinnati.
Totally.
They've been pretty good against the spread. Nothing eye-popping. Most of their games have been double-digit wins outside of a couple weirdo ones against Tulsa and Navy. Defense has been good all around. The offense has been very, very good as well. This is just a solid team. Now, let me back up. To say they're just
solid is disrespectful, sir.
I get it. All right. To say that they're just a solid team is, yes, doing them a bit of a disservice. They're a very, very, very good team. Of all the solid teams, perhaps they're the most solid.
I don't know. Jerome Ford in the open field? Myjai Sanders? Sauce Gardner? There's star power to this team.
There's star power, but do you feel that sex appeal?
No, well, they just didn't play on big stages this year. And that wasn't their fault. The one big stage they played on, they took advantage of short field and turnovers and beat a top 10 team on the road. I think that's sexy, Ty. I think that's sexy as hell. It's giving me the vapors. I'm getting tingles down my spine. That's college football ASMR, baby.
Do you think Cincinnati can go toe-to-toe with Alabama?
Yes.
Why?
Any team that can rush the passer and has secondary play behind those pass rushers, like Georgia kind of has, but that was coming into the season when you look at where Georgia was strong and not so strong. They lost both of those corners last year. They bring in the Clemson transfer, whatever. But I don't know. Clemson with time to game plan for Alabama, and there's only so much you can do against Bryce Young. This is not an Alabama team going four deep with first round receivers.
Right.
John Mechie's out. They're going to have to rely on Slade Bolden, a couple tight ends. Like Jamison Williams is, of course, one of the best receivers in the country. But in terms of varied options, now, and I don't know how this actually affects things, offensive coordinator has COVID. He'll be supposedly coaching, Bill O'Brien coaching in this game. Offensive line coach, Doug Marrone, COVID, will be coaching in this game. There's something to me about Alabama against this Cincinnati team that, and we mentioned this on the Confidence Bowl preview, Cincinnati's the team, quote unquote, you want to get in the playoff draw, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be that rat poison for Bama. If there's any sort of look at what Bama struggled with this year, it's their offensive line was overwhelmed at times by LSU and Auburn. I think Cincinnati gets after the passer better than Auburn and LSU did. I meant LSU. I think I said Cincinnati. I think it's an interesting matchup for Cincy. Ultimately, I don't think the Bearcats have the winter wonders. That to me is the drawback. That outside, who are you making Alabama pay attention to every moment of this game? Michael Young, Alec Pierce. I'm not there with those guys. And that's why we coined the phrase winter wonders, that they don't have the gravity. And for all the good of Desmond Ridder and Jerome Ford, Alabama transfer, that's what I worried about. That if this is a race to 34,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
That Cincinnati just doesn't have the engine. They don't have the gears to get to 34, whereas Bryce Young is so amazing, passing downs, extending plays, improvising, that even if a kid and whoever steps into the John Mechie shoes, that they're going to step up, they're going to make plays, and the next big thing for Alabama is going to be good enough. And I don't see it from Cincinnati to have the guy to make an Alabama secondary, which has struggled at times this year, for sure. I just don't know who's making him pay. Who's shaking him down. That to me is the issue. So I'm taking the points here. I'm taking the points with Cincinnati. What's the current spread is? What did you have? 13.5?
13.5. Yeah, yeah. It's around two scores.
It's too big of a spread against a defense this good at its peak. So I'm going Bama to win this game. 28-17.
Okay.
28-20. Somewhere between a touchdown and 11 points. Somewhere in there.
I think that I agree. I think Luke Fickell will have this team prepared. There's sure. Definitely a tendency to look at this particular matchup and say, well, since he's a group of five team. They're a group of five team against Alabama. They're going to get killed. If you've paid any attention to college football this year, I hope you would know that that's probably not the case. This is a really good mm-hmm. team in Cincinnati. I mean, I did not quite do them justice by saying they're very, 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 very solid. Mm-hmm. They've been really freaking good.
Yeah, and only undefeated team from a good conference, not a great conference, a good conference.
The best of Cincinnati has been outstanding mm-hmm. this season, and we've seen flashes of that. You know, I think a couple things here. Cincinnati sure had moments against Tulsa, Navy, and some others here and there around the season.
Should have lost the Tulsa game, yeah.
But like the biggest games that they've had to play, they've really stepped up. The Notre Dame game being one of them. I'll even use the ECU game that they played late in the year after they finally got into the top four. Mm-hmm. That was a matchup that like ECU is a bowl team, not a bad team. There was some speculation like, hey, what could happen here? How about the conference championship game against Houston?
Yeah.
Or the SMU
the game. Defense.
There were plenty of opportunities here for this Cincinnati team to lay an egg in a big spot. And in all of the big spots, they rose to the occasion.
Yeah.
And so I like that. That gives me some confidence that this is a team that's going to be prepared for this game, that in the biggest moments, they step up. I also think that, as you said earlier, strangely, this is an Alabama team that maybe doesn't have the same amount of weaponry that we're used to seeing. The Metchie injury is fairly significant. This is also a team that hasn't run the ball as well this season. Of course, they have players and dudes, and they're going to get theirs. But
the best pass rusher in the nation.
Yep. Best pass rusher in the nation. I mean, it's still Alabama, right? But
yeah,
it's a different composition that I think we're dealing with this year.
Okay.
So I get it, and I'm with you on taking the points here. I just think it's too much. What really scares me, though, is that Cincinnati has not played a defense like this all year. They played Notre Dame earlier in the year, and Notre Dame was good enough. It wasn't like they got blown out, but Notre Dame's defense was able to kind of corral this Cincinnati offense in the second half. And I haven't seen a whole lot of other activity here from the Cincinnati offense against really good defenses to leave me feeling too confident that they can handle this. Now, counterpoint, they acquitted themselves pretty well in last year's bowl game against Georgia.
Indeed.
And that was a pretty big game against a really good defense. And so with weeks to prepare and get ready and all these guys having another year under their belt, I don't think it's a scenario where they're going to go out there and get blown out. But I do think at the end of the day, talent wins. Stars matter. And I probably favor the school that's been there before, the coach that's won a gazillion national championships, the Heisman Trophy winning quarterback to make the play in the end that ultimately wins this thing. I could see this being very close, very close. And I said it 2 weeks ago when we did our preview, like of the two playoff games, this is the one that I'm least confident in because I get the sense from Cincinnati that they can do a couple different things well. They've got the mobile quarterback. They may not have the threats out wide that you could beat you deep with, but they've got Jerome Ford. They've got guys who can rush the passer and make things uncomfortable for the Alabama offense. So like I'm with you. I think more points. I think something like 31-24. Maybe a late touchdown gets that cover, or a late field goal or something, but I expect Cincinnati to contend here. In the end, I think Bama's better, but I think for a good chunk of the way here, we could be looking at a very, very good football game.
Yeah, I worry a little bit about a dam opening, that the dam breaking, that Alabama scores and immediately gets a pick six, and you're just like, what does Cincinnati look like down 17-3?
Right.
Like,
right.
What does the complexion, what does the tenor, what does the rhythm of this Cincinnati team look like from that kind of deficit? Whereas Alabama has sort of been there, done that. Other than Bryce Young, like, this is a team that has been through all sorts of different battles against high-level competition, that's where maybe they are able to tap into something that Cincinnati is not. So the Underthink Express says 38-13 Bama, right? That like Cincinnati is right there. It's 13-10 after a quarter and a half, and then dam breaks. I'm going Cincinnati here to cover in Alabama to win this game ultimately for the reasons I laid out. But man, you can see where this can go in a number of different directions very quickly.
If you want to bet this game, here's a pro move.
Uh-oh.
Don't bet this line.
So what's the move?
The move is to wait till the game starts, because I saw the stats somewhere and I would happily give the person credit if I could remember who put it in my head. But Alabama's first handful of drives has not been the highest converting. And
right.
Oftentimes it takes them a little bit to just like slink their way into a game.
Which is where they were these last couple of years with Mac Jones and Tua. Like they were, you take a long pee, it's 21-0. Yeah.
Takes them a little bit longer to figure things out. I don't know if that's a Bill O'Brien thing or Bryce Young thing or whatever thing. Whatever it is, first handful of drives, Alabama has not always been the best team in college football. And so that presents an opportunity, if live betting is your thing, which I don't normally advise anyone to do because you can lose a ton of money and it's really not worth it. But you could find yourself in a scenario where Bama goes three and out on three consecutive drives, a point spread dips down to 10, or maybe Cincinnati comes out hot, they get an early touchdown and Bama goes three and out and punts or something like that. Just keep an eye out early to see what that line does, because ultimately, first three drives of the game, unless it's a huge catastrophe, throw a couple pick sixes, probably won't have too much bearing on the game. And if that line jumps in a direction that's favorable to you, just consider it. That's a tendency that we've seen from Alabama. And again, I apologize if somebody can call out who gave me that stat. I would appreciate it. But I know that is something that I looked at before, and it's potentially profitable in this matchup.
So the live line is your wedding waiter with the meatball sliders.
That's exactly correct.
Wait for that waiter to come out the door.
I'm waiting by the double doors. We're making eye contact. We're just about on a first name basis.
He's got the meatball sliders. What are you doing? Just keep your eyes on the door. Come on. Okay. I like that advice. I'm with it.
The second of our playoff games, Dan. Also just happens to be the DraftKings Sportsbook Game of the Week, presented by our good friends over at DraftKings.
Yes.
7:30 ESPN, the Orange Bowl. Knee, the college football playoff semifinal numero dos at the Orange Bowl at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. Number 3, Georgia. Number 2, Michigan. Georgia is favored by 7.5 points. Georgia, dude, they were the best team all year. Defense was awesome. They were great all year until the SEC title game. We all know how that went.
Yep.
We all know how that went. Alabama with a resounding victory. Now everybody's asking questions about Georgia. But Georgia's in this game, rightfully so. They deserve to be in the playoff even after the loss. 8-5 against the spread. Their defense, look, had a bad game against Bama, but as you rightly note here in your notes, second best defense after 2011 Alabama of the modern era.
Yeah.
So just incredible. Been an incredible defense, and it's been an incredible ride here for Michigan as well. Michigan won the Big Ten championship, 11-2 against the point spread. Is that the best of any team this year? I feel like it's got to be close.
They are. They are the number one team against the spread. A team that, like you mentioned earlier, look, if you're coming off of a bad season and people are saying, like, is this it for Jim Harbaugh? They are not going to get a lot of love from Vegas until they absolutely prove it. So they overcame everything, especially later on in the year when they emphatically took it to teams, Ohio State, Iowa, you know, Maryland, elite losers, like all these teams they ran away from. They weren't after, you know, the Rutgers game was kind of a low light when they didn't score in the second half. But really, they got their act together and made the best of what they did have on offense instead of sort of lamenting what they didn't, which is why Josh Gattis, I think he won the Broyles, right? Assistant of the year.
Yeah. No, I mean, look. Michigan's got a lot to prove here, but is very deserving of this game. Obviously, they won their conference. They finished out the year by beating Ohio State and Iowa in resounding fashion. The defense has been solid. They've got Aiden Hutchinson. He got his name in the ring of the Heisman.
That's true.
There's so much to be excited about if you're a Michigan fan going into this game. And I think one of the more interesting elements for me is the fact that they can. That's not to say that they always do, but they certainly can, and to some extent prefer to play the same style of offense as Georgia. They want to play that bully ball that they beat Ohio State with. They want to do that. That's where they're most comfortable. They don't want to turn it over to Cade McNamara to throw it 40 times. Cade McNamara's been very good this year, don't get me wrong. But that's just not their game. That's not what they want to do. They want to run with Hassan Haskins. They want to run with Blake Corum. They want to wear you down the way they wore Ohio State down. They want to run until your eyes bleed. And they want to win. And they want to move on and they want to play for the national championship. The question that I have for you, and this is why I'm skeptical of Michigan, is the only reason why. I am skeptical that they can play that style of football and beat Georgia. Alabama against Georgia is different. There's a Bryce Young factor there. There's a passing threat. It's just different. Just very, very different. Alabama was not like rushing oriented. Like there wasn't one particular thing on the Alabama side that you could point to and say, stop that and you'll probably win this game. Because
yeah,
they can kind of do everything, right?
Stop Bryce Young, you have a good shot, yeah.
But like with Michigan, I feel like the Georgia defense is good enough to take away that run to force them out of their game and make things really uncomfortable for Cade McNamara and Jim Harbaugh. That's why I favor Georgia here. That's really the only reason why.
Okay.
What do you think?
You're saying Michigan does not have the foundation. They don't have the metal. You have a hard time constructing the grit, the dirt of the Jim Harbaugh Michigan experience to a championship contending squad.
I don't think I'm saying that.
Against Georgia, you are.
I'm not saying they don't have the grit. I'm not saying any of that stuff. All I'm saying is
what
that.
What I'm hearing.
Stop it. Turn the music off. All I'm saying is this.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a very tough matchup for Michigan, as it would be for anybody going up against this Georgia defense.
Yeah.
I feel like the Georgia defense can take away the one thing Michigan wants to do well. And if they do that presents a problem for this offense and how they score points.
Right.
Doesn't mean that the Georgia offense is going to thrive either, which is probably a separate topic of discussion that we'll get into.
Sure.
But what scares me, as somebody who will be rooting for Michigan in this game, I'm not going to make any, you know,
Why are you rooting for Michigan?
It's been too long since they were on this stage.
All right. You want big, weird Harbaugh speeches? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm rooting for him in this game. I'm just really concerned about that matchup.
Okay. Look, Michigan is scoring points. They're finding explosive plays in ways that they weren't able to earlier on in the season. And for all of the talking points that I'm sure you and I are both responsible for, that would lead to us saying something like Cade McNamara throwing into the Georgia defense? I don't know. Players improve over the course of the year. Coaches adjust, and they lose their best receiver earlier on in the year, and Ronnie Bell pretty early on. And they've adjusted. They found dudes. They're lining Donovan Edwards up in different spots. Andrel Anthony steps up in a losing effort, I believe, against Michigan State. But they're finding guys. The defense makes plays. The defense has the luxury of playing with David Ojabo and Aiden Hutchinson rushing the quarterback, which is very nice. And we saw when Georgia couldn't get home how Alabama was Alabama. I say like Forrest Gump. Alabama was able to take advantage when Georgia couldn't get home. I think Michigan is well coached. I think they rush the passer. I think they prevent big plays. I think Cade McNamara is not all that different. I don't think he's as good as Stetson Bennett, who we anticipate playing, especially with the news of JT Daniels coming down with COVID and I think negative tests within the quarterback room so far otherwise. But I am going Michigan here to win this game.
Whoa.
I'm going Michigan outright to win this game.
Whoa.
Because I feel as if we are doing everything we can to talk ourselves out of Michigan winning this game. Like, it's easy to talk yourself into Georgia, but if you just don't think Cade McNamara is good enough to make plays against this Georgia defense, I get that. Go with Georgia. Go with the Dogs. This is also a huge spot for Georgia. And historically speaking, if you're believing in the karmic powers of the universe, maybe not karmic, but just the greater powers of the college football universe, I don't know. They lose their defensive coordinator, who's going to be there, but I don't think calling the defense, Dan Lanning, who's moving on to Oregon. So now Will Muschamp and Glenn Schumann are the co-coordinators in this one. So now we're talking about Broyles award-winning assistant offensive coordinator against Will Muschamp. Like, there are differences in this game. So George Pickens, I saw, tested positive for COVID, but then subsequently tested negative. So maybe there was a false positive there, which could be a boon and certainly adds a winter wonder and a gravitational element to this Georgia offense to go with Brock Bowers, of course, in the passing game and at times Ladd McConkey. I'm going Michigan here. I think the stronger coach and stronger staff right now may just be in Ann Arbor. I like the offensive line that just won the Joe Moore Award. I don't think they're going to run all that successfully. I don't think they're going to score all that many points.
Yeah.
I think they can win this game 24-21, 20-17, 27-24, something like that. So I don't love the pick, but I'm speaking with my chest, and I can just see it. I can see Dax Hill running downhill. I can see Michigan's defense making plays, and I don't know. There's something about the pass rush that in these to me, close matchups, when you have that transformational guy in Aiden Hutchinson, that it's going to make it. I think that is the, on the margins, slight difference to me. And I have Michigan winning this by three.
If they're going to win, it would be by three. It would be a hard-fought defensive battle. Field position, probably a couple turnovers. It will still be dictated by defense in some way, shape, or form. I don't think you're going to see some sort of outpouring of offense here. That's just not the way that this game's going to go down. But I will tell you, I spoke with my chest a few weeks ago.
You did. You absolutely did.
I spoke with my chest a few weeks ago, and I tweeted out that Georgia's going to throttle Michigan, and that really wasn't like intended to be a dig or a dunk or anything against Michigan. I just felt like Georgia's a lot better.
Okay.
And I have sort of talked myself off of that pedestal a little bit.
Okay.
You know, in typical fashion, the closer you get to the game, the more you dig in. I understand why you'd go Michigan.
Do you have a total lean? I think it's 45 for our friends at DraftKings.
I would not want to go over on this.
Really?
I would not want to go over on this because I think there will be a tendency. I mean, we've seen it from Kirby. We've certainly seen it from Jim Harbaugh to just sort of play close to the vest.
Okay.
And not do anything wrong. And frankly, both of these quarterbacks are those types of quarterbacks. Cade McNamara has been very good at that. Just minimize damage. And so I could definitely see both these programs trying to keep this pretty low scoring, ball control, field position, that type of thing. But I get where you're coming from. I'm still worried about the same thing, though, that caused me to send out that dumb tweet weeks ago. And that is that particular matchup with what Michigan wants to do on offense and what Georgia wants to do on defense and how good the defense is. If they take away that rushing component for Michigan, are they going to be good enough? Can Cade McNamara throw it 30, 35, 40 times if need be and win this game for the Wolverines? That to me is the question. And to answer that question, I feel more confident right now in the Georgia Bulldogs defense than I do the Michigan offense. But this is a fascinating game. I would bet Georgia minus the number. I would bet Georgia minus the number.
Current number, 6.5, 7.5?
7.5.
7.5, yep.
I think we're probably looking at a game, I would say something like 28-17, like right around that number.
Right on the total, okay.
Right around that number.
Yeah.
I'm definitely more confident in this bet than I would be that Cincinnati-Alabama game. I still feel that way, but
all right.
I can see the logic behind it. And again, we've been very friendly to the Georgia folks over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I will be happy with whoever wins this game.
Okay.
I am pulling for Michigan, though. It's a cool stage for them. I'm excited to watch.
Promise me this, because now that I mentioned the waiter with the meatball slider, I am once again fully fixated on getting a meatball sub, oozing with mozzarella cheese. What will you be eating on December 31st for these games? Give me at least one meal that you are going to try and make or order or whatever to further your enjoyment. Are you going to get a giant Italian sub? Are you going to go with some Thai food to be very in with your name? What do you get?
Sure. So there is a good chance there will be folks over here, family, watching the games with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so my hunch is that it won't necessarily be any kind of grand feast, but something of the takeout variety with some kids that are going to be over.
Great.
So maybe it's just pizza. Maybe it's just something simple.
Just pizza. Food of the gods.
But whatever it is, it will be good football food because we're obviously going to have these games as backdrop. How about yourself?
I'm going to try to get a meatball sub.
Yeah.
I'm going to try to get a meatball sub. I'll be in California. So I might try to make a pan or two of Detroit pizza. If not, I think I'm going to go meatball sub for at least one of the meals involved because it's going to be a long day, a long, glorious, beautiful day of football.
Don't forget to download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use the promo code SOLID.
Mm-hmm.
You bet just $5 on any college football team and you will win $200.
Wow.
In free bets if they're victorious. That's the promo code SOLID. Bet on college football this bowl season again at DraftKings Sportsbook. Got to be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or PA. New customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook. For details, gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER-DAN. Thank you again to our good friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook.
Yeah. Agree.
I think that's all I got, Dan. This has been fun.
This has been quite fun. I cannot wait for the games. I cannot wait to eat. I cannot wait to... Maybe we'll throw in a live stream here
or
there.
We'll figure something out. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
I think we'll figure something out. YouTube.com/TheSolidVerbal. Yeah. I'm very hungry. I have not really eaten a meal today, and it's 2 p.m. Central. I'm going to make a couple pies and just think about college football even more, because that's what we do.
That is what we do. Okay, don't forget to subscribe, to rate, to review wherever it is you listen to The Solid Verbal or podcasts at large, be it Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, you name it. Subscribe, rate, review. Don't forget to go on out to the YouTube channel, as Dan said, youtube.com/TheSolidVerbal. We're posting more frequently out there. Verballers.com, as always, is where you can find our Patreon and get part of the awesome Verballer community that we've been building now for 2 seasons. And last but not least, our website, solidverbal.com, Dan. Solidverbal.com is where you can go and read articles. We're still posting articles out there from Travis, from Connor, and from Bradley. Find all sorts of added morsels of college football goodness.
Agree again.
For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrandt, we'll talk to y'all in a few short days. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.